Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is Aaron O'Brien, and Captain Foley is with us tonight.
That's right. Welcome.
Welcome. Hey. It's good to have you again, man.
Thank you. So it's good to be had again. That sounds kind of dirty, but it's good to be back. I love you guys.
I mean, we do things dirty here. You know that. I think the first time we had you on, we said something especially bad, and you rolled with it. So I was like, this guy's awesome.
That's exactly how I roll, man.
So if you don't know Captain Foley, he is part of the duo over on Trek Yards where they take ships apart piece by piece and they analyze them. And actually analyze some other aspects of Star Trek as well. Like you guys did the Picard maneuver and the Kittimer peace accord stuff. So
and while Discovery was on, they were doing every day something new about Discovery. It was great.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to have something Discovery-esque every week, I think, until it comes back in January. I don't know. We're going to try.
Well, speaking of Discovery stuff and news, there was that nice behind-the-scenes production video that came out like a couple days ago. I guess it'll be a week by the time you hear this.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, that little trailer that they sent that they're actually recording and setting the whole thing up. We got a couple scenes of
uniforms.
The, yeah, you know, but they have the red uniforms, and I'm like, heh, what? Mm-hmm. Did you do that too, Stuart?
I did, yes, I did. And they kind of tie in with Star Trek Beyond. They look Kelvin-esque, which is sad. I'm sorry.
I was hoping they'd go with the turtlenecks, like in the cage.
Well, that's my point. I mean, they should have been in the turtlenecks era, but all of a sudden they're like, yeah, that's, you know, a flat. I mean, they are nicer looking uniforms than the original Cage uniforms, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Do you think they're jerking us around with Spock? Because they did the whole, they've been hemming and hawing about whether Spock is going to be in it or not. Like, I mean, I don't mean like, Pike Spock. Because they've said for sure young Spock's going to be in a flashback, so I'm guessing that's adolescent, young, like flashback era Spock, but not like current prime timeline Spock. And they keep hemming and hawing over that, but they used a ton of Spock quotes in this little trailer. So I'm like, are they just like screwing with us?
That I don't know. I'm curious to find out myself.
It's like, why would they build a bridge and then, you know, cast Pike? And not cast Spock, not cast anyone else. Like, why would you go through all that trouble?
Maybe Spock's missing.
Maybe
he's kidnapped, or maybe something happened that they had to use Discovery's jumping spore powers to go find him.
Discovery Season 2, The Search for Spock.
And did you notice that the quotes they used from Spock was kind of like scattered all over? It wasn't from the Cage or anything like that. They were kind of like different quotes from different time periods of Spock too.
So that's why I'm like, they've got to be casting Spock. They got to be. Why would they have all these Spock quotes in there? Other than like, it would be cruel if it was just to fuck with us.
Well, that's kind of been their modus operandi.
That's totally true, Stuart.
I know. It's sad but true.
Oh, I mean, it's so frustrating because it's like you just want to like enjoy it, but then they just do these little things to just twist you to go like, oh, why'd you do that? It could have been so much better, or you could have made it work so much more, you know, from the longtime fans.
Yeah.
Was there any other Star Trek news other than that? That was like the big thing that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, so Star Trek 4 has been greenlit. Chris Hemsworth is apparently coming back as George Kirk, so Kirk's dad.
I'm glad that, like, 3-year-old rumor is still, you know, going on.
Apparently it's been greenlit now, so I don't know. And now I've also heard rumors that there's 2 Star Trek movies coming out.
Well, that's what they said. One with Star Trek 4 and then Quentin Tarantino's maybe as the other one.
Yeah, I don't buy that, personally. So
All I know is Chris Hemsworth is going to be huge compared to the version we had from before.
Chris Hemsworth is jacked now.
I know. He's going to be like, his arms are going to be enormous.
Dad, are you Thor?
Sorry. I'm sorry, sir. You can't even fit in the uniform. You're too large.
I can't wait to see him buff in the uniform. It'd be great. Or maybe they just won't give him arms.
So is it flashback? Is it Mirror Universe? Because in Mirror Universe, he could be more buff. Or is it going to be, since it's Star Trek 4 and they're like ripping off the other Star Trek movies, is it going to be a time travel one? You know, yeah. What's it going to be?
Probably. I mean, we haven't seen the Guardian of Forever yet in the Kelvin timeline. Might as well say hi to the Guardian of Forever. And we're getting our first female-directed Star Trek movie with Star Trek 4 as well.
Yes.
Right. It's all going to be very interesting. I do wonder if they're going to pull his sleeves off and he's going to walk around without any sleeves.
You know? Like I said, Mirror Universe would work.
Yeah, it would work.
With no sleeves, yeah.
It would work, very much so. Yeah,
that would be fantastic.
Well, so besides that news, we are talking this episode about the Enterprise incident from the original series. This is season 3, episode 4. And it aired September 27th, 1968. And this was from Captain Foley's request.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite TOS episodes, if not the... Well, it's hard to pick a favorite.
Yeah,
it's up there in the top five, depending on my mood.
Yeah, it'd be on your mixtape.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
So it was funny. I watched this episode twice. I watched it from Netflix, which has the updated special effects. Then I watched it on CBS All Access, which does not, for some reason.
Really?
Yeah, on CBS All Access, it was the original classic 66, or I guess it would be 69 version, where it's three Klingon D7s and not the two mm-hmm. and the one Romulan warboard.
That's interesting. So they don't have the updated graphics?
I guess. I mean, unless I'm looking in the wrong spot, but I only saw one version of TOS on there, so I was really confused by this.
Wow.
Bummed out, yeah. Because, the reason they used the D7s for this episode, if you guys didn't know, was because the original Romulan Warbird from Balance of Terror mm-hmm. went missing. Model was either stolen
cloaked.
Or something.
Cloaked.
It cloaked. Yes, they cloaked it and put it away and forgot where it was.
Damn it, where do we put that? Oh, I engaged the cloaking device before when I put it down. So...
Hope someone doesn't run into it, break their shin.
Yeah, right. But they couldn't rebuild it, or this wasn't in the budget.
I don't think it was in the budget.
Yeah, no. Season 3 especially, right?
Yeah, they barely got a season 3, right? So
Kirk barely had a haircut. I mean, honestly, those mutton chops are getting pretty long on him.
Yeah.
Also love how what's his name became the robot Nomad. Nomad was the cloaking device. He got he got fat though.
Yeah,
he put on some pounds in between seasons.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you got a big head, I guess.
Yes, that's hilarious. All right, so should we start off with just breaking down this episode?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Well, we start off at the beginning where we have a very angry and irrational Captain Kirk, and he is just barking orders. And we have a kind of voiceover from Dr. McCoy saying that Captain's behavior has been being erratic, and maybe the stress of command is getting to him, and that he needs to take some days off. But so Kirk, during this time, he decides he's going to take the Enterprise into the Romulan neutral zone, into Romulan space. And obviously Spock doesn't say anything, but Sulu is like, hey, you do know that this is taking us into the Romulan neutral zone. And he says,
I'll show you how to use anal beads. I'll show you how to do it the right way. Check off, you too. Because he's like, I'll tell you when it's right.
And then, of course, once they get into Romulan space, they are quickly surrounded by Romulans now using, as we said before, the Klingon-style D7s. And we get one Warbird as well.
Depending on which version you watch.
Yeah, exactly. But the one of the D7s have some, at least the one that we could see that clearly has some cool bird feathers all painted.
Well, that's because it was an upgraded K-11 Stormhawk, because that's what the Romulan versions of the D7s were.
Really?
Yeah.
And what did they give for information to retcon that? Like they stole a bunch of them, or did they just?
You got to watch our episode on it. It's the Klingon Romulan Alliance and Technology Exchange of 2267. So it happens in year 2 of TOS. The Klingons and the Romulans team up because the Romulans need a new, more stable power supply for their newly updated cloaking devices, and the Klingons have that, so they do a trade. The Klingons give them some of their D7s. The Romulans give them some of the older cloaking devices. That's why the Klingons get cloaking devices, as we see in Star Trek III later. So there's a nice technology swap there.
Interesting.
It's also interesting because they sort of talk like how cloaking devices are new. They don't say new specifically when Kirk is talking about it, but it's like they know there's a new one developed that they can't penetrate, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like they knew Discovery had ones they could penetrate.
There is no such thing as Discovery.
Well, what?
What?
It's a secret. It's a secret.
It's a secret ship. Keep it secret. Keep it safe. It's shaped like the Ring of Power. I bet Mordor words are carved around the edge of that ring.
I bet there is.
That big hand comes in and puts it on. Anyways, we go into the next, after that commercial break, Kirk tells Uhura to contact Starfleet Command and just to send all their log entries over to them. But then we get Sub-Commander Tall, and he wants them to surrender the Enterprise and basically prepare to be boarded. But then Kirk decides that there must be a reason why they haven't destroyed them yet. And they basically surmise that the Enterprise has a treasure trove of secrets that the Romulans would love to get their hands on. So the commander
learned how to make a starship. What are their things they're flying around? Are those not starships?
Well, I think they know if they could get all the secrets of how they put everything together. You know.
The thing is, like in the Memory Alpha, at least for Balance of Terror, it seemed like it was suggested that like there was like parts cut from the script that was implying the Romulans had kind of stolen starship technology from Starfleet prior, and that's how they got the current design of their ship.
Yeah, that's why the Romulan Warbird in Balance of Terror is white, the Federation white look. And it's based on Federation tech, hence why the nacelles are similar as well. And that's what they use as the test platform for the new plasma torpedo weapon system and new cloaking system.
Interesting.
I'm so sad they cut that, because that's a really cool thing to include.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool stuff.
So they want the full schematics, not the partial schematic.
Yeah, right. They want everything. They want the whole kit and caboodle. So then what they do is they end up making an exchange that Kirk and Spock will be transported on the Romulan vessel to talk to their to the commander. And they have an exchange of two Romulan officers are beamed aboard.
Which, ironically enough, in the next scene, when the guards bring Kirk and Spock into her quarters, it's the same guards, same actors.
Same guys.
Yeah.
Weren't you?
They were twins,
didn't
right?
You just,
they
yeah.
were two sets of twins.
They're clones.
Romulus and Remus.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And so then obviously the commander is a female, and this is where we get to see the Romulan commander and Spock have their little, I don't know, what do you want to call it, flirting? I don't even know if it's flirting.
Is it flirting?
sexual tension.
Sexual tension.
They rub their hands together a little bit.
They do. Well, that's how they do it. The commander points out that there's no way to make a Vulcan speak, but she could torture Kirk to make him confess his crimes. Or
try the V spot.
But Spock tells basically that Kirk was not under Starfleet orders and that he is mentally unstable and that they had no right to go across a Romulan neutral zone. And he did it for his own glorification.
Because he was feeling randy. He wanted to penetrate that zone like no other captain had.
Yes, he did. And then the angry Captain Kirk is hauled off to the Romulan brig. The Romulan commander basically tells the Enterprise that what's happened, that Kirk has been imprisoned. And she says the crew of the Enterprise is to basically follow her to Romulus, and they'll be released back to the Federation. But Scotty says, no way am I taking orders from anybody but Captain Kirk.
Good man.
Yes, he is. He stayed strong. He didn't go, oh, all right, whatever. But then the Romulan commander tries to tell Spock that, you know, obviously that her and Romulan, Spock, they're like cousins together, and he should take command of the Enterprise and take it back to Romulus. So she's trying to appeal that by his lineage with the Romulans, and that, you know, these humans have got to be annoying to be working with for all these years. But Spock does kind of say it has been a little annoying working with these humans, and they're so emotional
and they smell bad.
Apparently, he doesn't bring that up.
Yeah,
T'Pol would.
But we, T'Pol really hated that smelling. Smelly socks. I wonder if they smell like old gym socks to them. Do you think so? Anyway, those humans smell like old gym socks.
How do you get that smell out of a human?
Yeah, how do you? Change their diet, I guess.
No more replicated old gym socks.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, get that old musty smell out of there. Anyways, we go on. Next, we get to Spock goes with the commander and to go down, go to see Kirk. He starts walking down a forbidden corridor, and he's like, you can't walk down there.
But hopefully one day you will.
Yeah, that's right. So
after we've done the pond fire.
So Kirk hurts himself while in their holding cell. He basically rams himself against the force field. And they bring McCoy over to look him over, and McCoy is looking at him, and he's basically saying he's shot, mentally shot. There's nothing left of him. This corroborates Spock's testimony, and the commander of the Romulan ship says that Spock should be in command of the Enterprise, and this leads to Kirk basically attacking Spock, where Spock uses the pseudo Vulcan death grip.
Yes, because it was instinctive. He came at me.
It so fast.
I couldn't stop it.
It just was, well, isn't that the funniest thing? Is like it's the most lame attack I've ever seen.
Well, I don't know. I've seen a lot of lame attacks from Kirk, the Kirk Fu and all that.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. The double kick in the midair is pretty fun looking, though.
It is pretty good. It's pretty good. Where he brought down all those guys in Taste of Armageddon.
Yeah. I love when he throws the pillow or the garbage can or. Yeah, those are good moves.
It's a distraction. It's a
moves like Jaeger.
Moves if he like only Jaeger. Had sand to blow in their face, he'd do that too.
Yes. Oh, they're so good.
Like the samurai of old.
But McCoy says that Kirk's dead, so we have another Kirk is dead. And,
dun, dun, dun.
Meanwhile, Kirk is brought back in the Enterprise, and he wakes up, and the Vulcan death grip is to be just a nerve block. It's kind of just to pinch him to kind of fake death. Another Vulcan magic. And
there are pressure points.
And they basically, Kirk and Spock are working together to steal the cloaking device. That's what they learn, what's actually happening. And Kirk then McCoy surgically alters Kirk to appear Romulan. And
they call Scotty down.
Yeah, the Nurse Chapel and Scotty are brought into the loop, and we have a very comical scene of when.
Well, you got to wonder when was Spock aware of this plan? Because it didn't seem like he was at first.
I think he was acting.
I think he was always aware.
And then McCoy. When was McCoy brought in? Because I don't think McCoy knew right away, unless it was part of his narration, the voiceover, the log was all. He must have been in the loop, maybe. I don't know.
I feel like he must have been in the loop. In the episode, he did say, I didn't know for sure until I saw Kirk on the Romulan ship, but it could have been just more cover. Because, I mean, like, it doesn't make sense if they didn't know about it beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this makes me wonder, is Kirk, McCoy, and Spock part of Section 31? Because they kept the mission secret from the rest of the ship.
What is your obsession with Section 31?
I just love me some Section 31.
The answer is no, because there's no Section 31 until much later in Star Trek.
No, but there's Section 31 in Enterprise and Section 31.
But no, there's not. See, Enterprise didn't happen yet. See, that's retconning.
Oh, you're just saying because of how it came out. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't ever think Section 31 has anything to do with the Enterprise crew. I mean, if there were agents possibly aboard, but it wasn't Kirk, Spock, McCoy, or anybody else. So.
This is just such a weird... I mean, this is such a weird mission for them to go on, for Starfleet to go, hey, look, you know, don't tell the rest of your crew this. It just seems really weird.
They're all weird missions.
I don't know. This one seems especially weird. It seems very covert ops, which is Section 31, which is why I'm like, maybe Section 31 put them up to this.
Nah, I think it's they just figured a way that they could use them to as a tool to, you know, and they found the best crew to do it. And Spock being a Vulcan was intriguing as a choice that he could be used as a tool as, you know, seduction with the Romulan commander. Not to say that they maybe knew that was going to happen, but they thought that it's a possibility. But anyways, moving forward, the Romulan commander brings Spock to dinner, and the food is wonderful for Spock, and they're drinking blue beverages, which is Romulan ale, I can only assume, and orange.
And then they moved to Tang. Yeah, Tang.
Yeah, I know. Let's try the
Tang and cantaloupe.
I thought it was Tranya.
Tranya. Yes.
I do like how they just kept on doing weirder colored drinks.
in these little plexiglass little cups that are the smallest little sip.
I do wonder, like in 1968, 69, when this was on, people were like, wow, that's just so wild, man. You know?
Groovy.
It is, man. I love it. You know, but then she basically keeps on saying that, you know, Spock has a future in the Romulan Empire, and that's, you know, they could be more than just he could be more than just a soldier with the Romulan Empire. She could maybe learn to love a Romulan woman, and Romulan women are not like Vulcan women. They are not just pure logic.
They don't pawn for once every 7 years, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, they're not
No, that's right. They just put out all the time.
I wonder if Vulcan's like, don't date your Romulan slut.
Yeah.
They put out more than Sarek's
advice of Spock on his graduation.
Of course, you'd have to cover Michael's ears because human girls put out two more often than one.
Yeah, it says always wrap it when you're with a Romulan, okay?
Yeah.
Don't. Anyways, so we go back to, the Romulan commander says she's going to slip into something more womanly-like, and she transforms a woman into her dress. But meanwhile, Spock is
makes a discreet phone call.
He's making the phone call and trying to get Kirk to get on board the Romulan ship. But Kirk, unfortunately, jumps on the Romulan ship before he hears from Spock. And he finds his way through the ship and does find the cloaking device.
Which I find to be sketchy as fuck.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Hi, Centurion. How you doing? You don't recognize me. It's okay. We got a huge crew on this ship. Not really. But, you know, yeah, go about your business. There's nothing going on here. There's a Federation ship just over there. We're fine.
Don't look at Tribble.
Don't look into it any further.
Don't think about it. What is the crew complement for that type of ship?
The D7?
Yeah.
Probably 230 or so.
No, I'm just saying there's still a lot of people.
Yeah. You know?
Not as many as a Constitution class ship, though, but.
Right, right.
But still, I mean, that's not a huge ship either. You'd know pretty much everybody on board. Like, at least recognize them.
Yeah. And there's so many twins on Romulan ships, too, so everyone looks even extra like.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not one of the standard package clones. Who are you?
Who are you? I don't know. Who you are.
You know that spy I keep talking about? That's me.
So Kirk made his way down the Forbidden Corridor.
He's like, I'm looking for the cloaking device, and the guy looks over at it. It's like, that's how.
Yeah, he looks
it
right at it. Oh, you mean that?
Section 31 training to figure out where the thing is.
Tal Shiar. Training is all going to shit. Anyways, so
hopefully none of these guys are part of the Tal Shiar, otherwise they're gonna get some severe beatings.
But during when he's in there and he's basically getting ready to steal the cloaking device, that's when Spock calls him and he's like, you know, I'm gonna steal it right now. But unfortunately, the sub-commander of the Romulan ship, Tal, intercepts the call, and he runs down to the commander's room, bangs on the door, saying it's really urgent, and
not now, I'm trying to bone Spock.
I know, we're doing pon-firing really hard here.
And the fact she walks in the room and he, like, not very well, hides his communicator as well. Yeah. I mean, that was just a little bit much for me.
It's interesting, I'm just getting ready.
Okay. Boy, you're good guys. You're bringing out the anal beads.
Yes.
Well.
Anyways, I watched Avengers today. That's what it felt like.
Anal beads.
It was painful.
Yes. Yes, it was.
It was painful. All right. So, but Kirk does get the cloaking device off the ship and beams back with to the Enterprise. Scotty is supposed to install the device in like 15 minutes. And Scotty's like, I don't even know how this damn thing works. It would have been nice if you let me know a little bit so I could prepare.
Yeah, no kidding. You think you'd let your chief engineer on that just because you might need him?
Yes, exactly.
Sure. Yeah, tell him about it.
But then Spock is obviously, you know, caught red-handed with that transmission, and he's going to be sent back to Romulus and going to be executed.
I think they were to execute him on the spot, but he's like, can I have the right of
That's right, statement. Rhyming the right statement, right. So he basically starts sitting, he sits down and starts to record, and he basically just telling the most basic information of what he did. He's like, yeah, I am guilty of the charge of sabotage.
He's like, I gotta make this YouTube video 10 minutes long.
It's gotta be 10 minutes.
It's that golden 10 minute mark for the ads, don't you know?
That's right. And so during that time, they do locate Spock on the Romulan ship, and they beam him off, and then they take off as fast as they can.
She runs and hugs him and does the Star Trek 4 maneuver.
Yes, she does. And so she gets beamed aboard, which I don't even understand why she brought herself aboard. She must know she would have been transported as well.
I think she was trying to make sure they could keep tracking the ship. Maybe they could track her, maybe, but I guess they couldn't, but I don't know.
Well, they were tracking them for a while, and she probably didn't even think they could install the cloaking device, but they didn't wager on Scotty being their chief engineer. So
this episode plays in huge if you watch Star Trek Continues, which is amazing.
Yes, it does, of course. The last two episodes.
Yeah, the two finale episodes, so good.
But yeah, so Scotty is trying to hook it up while the Romulans are in chase of the Enterprise at high speeds, and just when they're about to come into bear, so they're in range to fire on the Enterprise. The Enterprise engages the cloaking device, and it miraculously works, and they are cloaked.
And they take a hard right turn.
Mm-hmm. Take it back like just a step, though. When Spock beams out, why did nobody have shields up? You got an enemy ship right there.
And they just stole your cloaking device.
Right.
And you know they did.
Yeah. And why do people in Star Trek feel the need to jump on other people that are transporting?
I don't know.
Do you not find that maybe unsafe? You're going to come across the other side like one merged blob?
Yeah, like that poor doctor in the motion picture.
Or Gorinac.
Yes. And, like, Star Trek 4 is the worst one for that. Dr. Jillian jumps on Kirk. Like, how do you know that's not going to be very detrimental to both your health?
Well,
like, seriously.
The only thing is I give her a pass because she would have no clue. You know, she would know what was actually happening there. Well, anyways, so the Enterprise
at this point in time, was beaming with shields a thing? I can't recall it being mentioned, but I'm not super up on my TOS. I knew it became a thing in Next Gen for sure, but I don't remember it ever being specified beaming and shields.
I don't believe you could beam TOS. With shields. I don't believe you could ever beam with shields up, so.
I just don't remember.
I don't know if it was ever specifically mentioned, though. I think you're right.
That's what I'm saying. I just don't think there's ever specifically a mention of beaming and shields in TOS. I mean, in Next Gen and other shows, that was always a thing, and they mentioned it was a thing. But I can't think of a specific instance in TOS where they specifically said that. I mean, I may be wrong. I'm not super up on the TOS. I know Stuart and Aaron, you guys are both a lot more TOS than I am.
There might be one or two, like the Omega Glory or something like that, where the Klingons are in the area and they can't beam them up from the planet because, you know, keep the shields up kind of thing. I think that order might have been said once or twice from Kirk. Keep the shields up. Get out of here. Don't worry about us.
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't think of off the top of my head if it was for sure in canon and TOS yet or not. Because I know they're still figuring stuff out in TOS a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there is kind of a blank slate. I don't recall anything specific. The only thing I could say is for most time where ships are ship-to-ship combat, you don't really think about it, but the distance between those ships are usually pretty astronomical. You don't really when we see them in the movies and in the TV shows, they seem really close. But if you think about how fast they'd be flying at each other and how fast the torpedoes and phasers be shooting, they're a lot farther away. I think they just do that obviously to make it look more action-packed.
Yeah.
So it's possible that transporter range wouldn't be able to actually go as far when they're in a combat situation. Because if you did, if before that, you know, you could just probably just beam a bunch of troops onto your ship without you even, you know, and take over the ship. Anyways, just a thought.
Well, okay, interesting fact. I got to jump in here. Mm-hmm. Transporter range is about 10,000 kilometers. Mm-hmm. If you play Starfleet Battles, you know how the board is a bunch of hexes?
Yeah.
Right.
Each one of those hexes is 10,000 kilometers.
Okay.
Yeah, it kind of puts it into scale for you.
Yeah, 10,000 kilometers is enormous. It's really long. It's a long way to go, so... That makes sense. That makes sense to me. Well, anyways, just to wrap up the episode, the Enterprise does get away, and then Spock is going to take her to her quarters on deck two, and we take the longest
minute and 34 second turbo lift ride to deck two, where there are no quarters anyway,
right below them.
Yeah.
And he confesses that he was his only interest was the cloaking device, but he says that basically that, you know, don't believe me that, you know, you did bring up make me somewhat interested in certain things.
I did get a semi.
Yeah.
I won't lie, I did get a semi.
And then Kirk runs down to get his ears cut back because he didn't want to look like Spock for the rest of his life.
And Spock
it is a good Romulan, like, though, I gotta say.
Yeah. So, and that's it. And the episode wraps up. So, excellent episode. Stuart, you picked this episode and you are a guest. I would love to have your takeaways and thoughts of this episode and why you picked
it. Well, I picked it mainly because I love ships. And I know in the remastered, there are the D7s or the K-11 Stormhawks and the Warbird, which is cool. But the fact that they're using Klingon tech in the original version, I think is cool. It's a nice little nod. It turned into the whole technology and treaty exchange, which worked out pretty cool. So it's all ship-based. There's no planet going on.
Right.
The subterfuge, the stealth, the World War II-esque vibe of it really was appealing to me. I really like that. Stealing, you know, military secrets are the most fleeting of all, after all, don't you know? I just really love this one. The acting was pretty good as far as Shatner and Nimoy went.
And Nimoy and the commander, Raman commander, is fantastic.
Yeah. But I mean, it's TOS, so it happens all the time.
Right.
No, but overall, I really loved the whole feel of it. It was just a fun kind of out of character adventure almost. But it was, as with a lot of things, like Deep Space Nine is now my favorite series. And I think it's because it parallels the events, real life events of World War II very well. And you can't make that stuff up. So I think that's one of the reasons I really like this one, because it kind of steps away from the traditional TOS formula a little bit and kind of makes it something we can relate to.
Right.
You know, especially if you're a history buff, which I am. So I absolutely loved it. I thought it was great.
Dave, how about yourself?
It's a real fun episode. It does raise a lot of questions for me. Like we were mentioning earlier, it's like, who was in on this and when were they in on it? And to me, it makes more sense for them to be in on it. At least the three of them be in on it at the beginning. But, you know, that way part of McCoy's subterfuge is his log, so that if anyone listens to it, they can think he's clueless too.
Yeah. But the fun thing about that too is you feel like you're a crewman on board on the bridge. You don't know what's going on. So you're kind of in that, you know, what are the higher ups doing? It's kind of like a Lower Decks episode, right? You don't know what the command staff are up to, and it's all mysterious.
Yeah, well, of course. It's like a Lower Decks episode from the audience point of view instead of the audience point of view being where the leaders are. It's definitely an interesting way of doing it. But, you know, I love Section 31, so I like to try to fit them in wherever I can. And this kind of made me think, it's a weird mission. Mm-hmm. Very specific.
Yeah, but, I mean, the thing is, my take on this is, I mean, first of all, it's a fun episode no matter what. But it reminds me of the World War II when the British stole the German Enigma code machine.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same idea. You know, they take it from a U-boat that was sinking and that they were, you know, they wanted to steal this and basically use to break the German code so they could, you know, find out what the Germans were up to. It's not, I mean, there's no seduction, at least that we know on the U-boat, but you know those sailors.
There might have been
the seamen. Yeah, the seamen are pretty good.
Yeah. It's long, hard, and full of seamen.
But, yeah, so
and I taking mean, it, on water.
But it reminds me of that. So, I mean, that's the thing is that it's like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that the Enterprise would have been asked to do something this wild. And the Enterprise is often given missions that are almost impossible. And the reason why, you know, they're the best of the best is because of the crew and that they can pull this kind of crap off.
Even when they're clueless.
Well, the command crew isn't clueless. Yeah. I really believe Kirk and Spock were in cahoots the whole time.
Yeah, and Shatner's acting at the beginning was pretty awesome. It was cool to see him kind of being a little bit off kilter.
Yeah, he can play an angry captain for sure. But yeah, that's the thing is, and Spock playing kind of just like not maybe the doubting second officer. is an interesting interesting take between the two, because we don't usually see that as much. You know, Spock might question him here or there, but most of the time it's you know, he's right behind him for the most part. So, but yeah, so but that's and but the fact that they could pull that off with their crew, but I do think Scotty should have been probably
in the loop sooner.
Yeah, just read up on all the literature available on cloaking devices of what we know so far. So,
and just
do you want to know how it worked? Seriously, they tied it into the shield deflector grid. So the grid on the ship that makes the shields go up, that's what they tied the cloaking device into to make it invisible, because it covered the whole ship.
Cover the whole ship, right, exactly. Yeah. That's interesting.
Watch Trek Yards, guys.
We do, but you have a lot of videos.
I'm telling the fans out there, watch Trek Yards.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do, but you do have a lot of videos, you have to admit.
We do.
They do, and I just started watching Trek Yards a little over a year ago, because I found the saucer separation episode, and I'm like, oh, and I told Aaron, like, the right after watching, did you know D7s can separate? That's pretty cool. And he's like, what? Yeah. I was like, yeah, Trek Yards.
They actually do it in a comic book, which we didn't have the illustration for at the time. And, like, last week, I was talking to Samuel on Skype, and I'm looking through this comic, and I'm like, oh, look at this picture, we should have scanned this. And it's the boom separation on the D7. I'm like,
that's oh, really?
Awesome. Yeah.
Was it a newer or older version?
It's in one of the IDWs, so one from a few years ago.
Okay, right, right. Yeah, I know they released a whole bunch of older Star Trek from the 80s and 90s, like some that were written by Peter David and stuff like that recently, like as collections, but I haven't gone through all those. And those are all kind of basically around the movie era for Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Which are fun.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I still have a lot of retro Trek Yards to catch up on and the new stuff as well.
Oh, so sorry. Much Trek Yards. We keep pumping it out.
You do. And I need to get back on that horse soon, pumping more stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you get into your pumping phase.
Oh, yeah, because we were talking about the burritos and shit last time.
The burritos on the ship?
No, that I had burritos on my pants last time. That's why YouTube took down my videos.
Right, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, last week's joke.
Is that why they took it down?
Yeah, my burritos. No, they took... No, they still take down my Star Trek stuff or copyright stuff, even though I don't use video. Ironically, the one I used video in is still up.
What?
Yep.
YouTube's weird. YouTube's
yeah, I'm weird. Missing four or five of my Star Trek Discovery views just from using still images.
Oh man.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very weird thing. He's always butting heads against YouTube and Facebook, apparently.
Yep.
The bots don't like you.
They don't like me. I shared my Moscow Mule. I got banned for three or four, a week. Because I think they thought it was a Russian bot, because I said Moscow. There's a link. I'm like, oh, okay. That's how you're playing this game.
Moscow Mule is a real drink.
It's a drink. You know, algorithms don't understand context. Because context is for kings and not algorithms.
That's right. Yes. it is interesting that you bring up all the changes in the Klingon D7s. And the reasons why they made that trade. It seems odd to me that the Klingons would actually have a better power source for the ships than the Romulans.
More stable core. The Romulans... Sorry, I don't want to get technical.
No, go get technical.
I like it when you get technical. It's good.
The Romulans in TOS had standard older atomic-powered systems. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, in TNG, they moved to a quantum singularity, which is basically a black hole that powers a ship. Right. That wasn't the case in TOS. So they needed something more stable and more reliable than the older nuclear-style stuff that they had. So that's why they went to the Klingons and basically used them. Because you got to remember, the Romulans were refugees from Vulcan. They only had the ships that they left Vulcan in, and they had to, you know... take over Romulus and build an infrastructure. They didn't have the infrastructure in place. Mm-hmm. So the Romulans in Starfleet battles are kind of behind the times as far as being an advanced warp culture. So
that's fascinating that they made such a giant technological jump from nuclear to what they borrowed from the Klingons to we're just going to harness a quantum singularity.
They probably stole it from somebody.
Yeah, likely.
Lots of stealing in Star Trek.
Oh, of course.
But I feel like the Romulans should be smart enough to do it on their own, whereas the Klingons would be the ones that would need to steal it.
You know, the thing with the Romulans is, although they're kind of obviously based off Rome and the Roman Empire, I think that they really there's so much backbiting and there's so much political intrigue constantly and people getting blamed for this and that, and it seems like a very difficult landscape to build any kind of real technological growth in a fast pace.
Did you get a guy like Nero who burns down half a Romulus?
I'm sure. I mean, well, yeah, I mean, kind of, kind of. They do stuff like that with, what's his name? In Nemesis.
Shinzon.
Shinzon, yeah. Yeah. So anyways, it's not the right environment for growth. And that's, it's strange to me that the Romulans and the Vulcans.
But they have an empire. They had to have had some kind of growth that they have, like, if they've conquered an empire and there's a clear neutral zone to not need to go across.
A small empire. Initially, yeah. But yeah, and it's the lack of that infrastructure, because they were one with Vulcan at one point, and they left. So they had the old ships that they left on, and that's pretty much it. They had to build a new civilization on a new planet from scratch, essentially.
I just assumed they were the Vulcans who didn't want to follow the ways of Serac, and they were like, fuck you guys, we're not doing logic, we're going to stay angry.
That's See right.
You. Peace out.
They rage quit civilization.
Throw their controllers on the ground. Damn
it, I hate this, damn. I'll wait for the next version of Civilization.
That's right. It's Sim Civilization, or Sid Meier's. Well, how long ago was that? Because it has to be far more than like 200-300 years.
For the Romulan schism?
Yes.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know offhand.
Yeah.
It would have to be like 500 years or more.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, it has to be a long time. But, I mean, if you think about it, if they flew all the way to Romulus and they set up camp there.
I mean, I would say they had to at least be 100, 200 years before Enterprise.
And if they're on atomic engines, it could take them even longer. So who knows how long it took them. It could be like a whole Botany Bay thing where they're frozen.
Well, I guess it depends on when Serac was around, when the split happened.
Yeah, right. Well, it might not have happened right afterward. It could have been a slow change.
That's
true. Civilization, you know, they could have said, hey, screw this. We don't like this anymore.
I smell a Future Trek Yards episode coming up. I need to do research.
I know. Ooh. There's a lot of... that's what I like about you, Trek Yards. You're always like trying to find those little unanswered little questions and just do your digging and find out your best thoughts on something. Because there's a lot of little unanswered things in Star Trek.
Aaron and I would just find them occasionally, then just speculate.
That's all. And then we let it go.
Yeah.
We don't actually do any of the research. Yeah? We just talk about it.
We speculate.
Well, I remember growing up, there was like FASA and Starfleet battles and stuff, and they kind of filled in those details. So I have these little nuggets of memories of things that I heard over the years when I was a kid, when there was no internet. And I love sharing those and adding those into our research to kind of embed that in like the mythos of Star Trek, which is really cool.
I know.
Absolutely.
Those FASA books were great. I had a lot of those too, Stuart. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Unfortunately, I didn't get to play the game as much as I'd like. A lot of my friends weren't always into it as much. And did you feel the same way, that the character creation thing was a little clunky?
Yeah. It was more of a Starship thing for me. I didn't even actually play the FASA Starship Simulator at all. I had the miniatures. I didn't even have the game. Mm-hmm. I had the miniatures, and we used those miniatures, me and my brother, for Starfleet Battles, which is a different game dynamic altogether.
But how did you make the changes if you wanted to put like a, Excelsior class or Bird of Prey, because they didn't have those?
Well, we would just use the Excelsior for like a Dreadnought or something like that.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Because FASA was the movie era. They had the rights to the movie era stuff, and Starfleet Battles had the rights to the TOS stuff, so they're like uniquely different. But, you know, you still had the Constitution class miniatures and stuff, which was neat, so...
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, FASA for the time, you know, especially late 80s, well, mid-80s, late 80s, they had some cool miniatures, man. Home. Mm-hmm. They really did. And they'd advertise them and have all those painted models. And it's just, as a young kid, I just drool over that stuff.
Yeah, send check or money order. And I'm like, I don't have any money.
I don't have a checking account.
I used to drool over those pages all the time. And and there was lack of Star Trek merchandise accessible back then. And now I've got room full of it, you know. I made up for it since.
You're making up for lost time, exactly.
Yeah,
that's cool. I would love to get my hands on some of those miniatures again. I'd have to look up and see if they have them, or if anybody's still putting them out. You know,
isn't there a newer Star Trek miniature game?
Yeah, there's an updated version.
Yeah,
there's a TAC wing, and there's also another one, a captain's. I can't remember what it's called now.
TAC wing. Because don't they have a Star Wars TAC wing also, where they have Star Wars ships? It's the same or similar system.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's those miniatures are gorgeous, though.
Yeah, I gotta get my hands on some of those. It'll be fun. I'd love to get my hands on those because they're so beautiful. So many cool things to paint, too. I used to be a big miniature painter, but I got out of the habit of it with real life came crushing onto me.
Damn it, life.
Damn life, get out of my way.
Come
on. Yeah, exactly. Life. Yeah, so.
It's a shame.
It is a shame.
But kind of getting back to the episode, like the World War II things, I think it makes me like the episode more now that you were talking, you both mentioned World War II. I'm like, it makes a lot more sense to
yeah.
me as an episode. I mean, because it's a fine episode as it is, but I mean, with the historical reference added to it, I definitely think it's a lot more interesting. And I do remember that story about that you were talking about, Aaron, with the you're stealing the plan so you break the code. I'm like, yeah, that's cool.
Enigma. Yeah, code breaker.
Yeah, because it just didn't cross my mind when I was watching the episode. So now that I can look back and think, that's pretty interesting.
And even Balance of Terror was the same thing. It was the sub versus sub, you know, can't see the enemy, you know.
Submarine battle.
It would make a good stage production, Balance of Terror, actually.
Yeah.
Just that cat and mouse kind of game, the intrigue. I love it.
It is. It is. Actually, growing up, that was one of my favorites just to watch because it was just, it really felt like a real starship to ship battle would be like. You know, it's just there, you know, out there just facing each other and trying to find each other and blow each other up. I mean, just great.
So good.
And the thing is, too, remember that, you know, all these guys that were, you know, well, not everyone, but a lot of them served during World War II. The writers, the directors, producers.
Scotty himself.
Yeah, a lot of them.
That's how he lost his finger.
Yeah, a lot of them served. So they do understand these things. And the references are probably not lost on a lot of those people that were watching it at the time, too. The generation that came back from World War II. So
exactly, yeah.
Yeah. And maybe the kids too who grew up with those people, you know, that I grew up with them and kind of
and like, heard the stories at the dinner table of
yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so they probably kind of like just edged it into a new generation and obviously the generation afterward because I'm a Gen Xer, so you know, come from the baby boomers, so that would make sense.
Absolutely, yeah. But this is a good episode. I mean, not deep on the philosophical, kind of like House of Cork. It's just kind of like you kind of take it how it is.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, it's just definitely a cool episode to watch. I mean, anybody who's a Star Trek fan should watch this episode and just enjoy it in its glory.
And especially if you're a Spock fan, because it really enhances his character a little bit. You get to see more of his internal struggle and, you know, what he's capable of, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a good Spock builder episode.
Yeah, it is, and a good Vulcan and Romulan filler episode, because it's the first and one of the few times, you know, they say, oh, the Romulans came from the same race as Vulcans.
Mm-hmm.
So right. It's good for world building.
Well, I mean, they mention in Balance of Terror slightly there, but...
I think it was just a racist, the racist guy in the front who was like, they look the same, they must be bad.
They look the same. I have a friend who is, for the first time, watching all the TOS episodes back to back, and he thought he'd be probably more into Kirk, but he's more fascinated as Spock as a character and as the actor as he watches it more and more. He tells me, he's like, oh, this is really interesting, you know. So see him. So it, like this episode too, you know, like you said, Stuart, this is a great episode to see Spock, just a different dimension that you normally don't see on him, you know, as the guy who's going to infiltrate the Romulan commander.
Well, I think that's the way for a lot of people. I think Spock is a fan favorite as much so, if not more so, than Kirk in a lot of ways. I mean, when Leonard Nimoy passed away, I cried at work, and he died when I was at work, and I listened to Warp 11 Beam Me Up to Heaven on the way to work that morning. I mean, that's like etched in my mind that I listened to that, and then I found that he passed away, and he's still my Facebook picture because I put it up the day he passed.
Yeah,
and like I love Kirk and I love Shatner, but I don't know if I'm going to have as big a visceral reaction to Shatner passing as Leonard Nimoy.
Even though
I've met Shatner since we got to take our picture with him last year, and I got to sit in this panel, I still think Spock's going to be a bigger deal when from Nimoy passing away.
Yeah, I don't know. I obviously Nimoy says a legend, of course, but I just wanted to be Shatner so much in Kirk when I was growing up. So maybe I just wanted to kiss all the girls. I don't know.
Tired of getting wedgies because we're the nerds. And it's like, I want to be like Kirk. He gets the chicks.
He gets the chicks. Yeah.
I get the swirlies, so that's not fun.
I mean, overall, it was a great episode. There are problems with it, of course, as there are with all Star Trek episodes, I think. Mm-hmm. My biggest real thing that bothered me about this one is, the Romulans' cloaking device. And not one mention was made to what happened in Dawns of Terror. The fact that, we already kind of dealt with the cloaking device thing, but they didn't really talk too much about it being a new enhanced cloak. We kind of had to surmise that. I
think they hinted at it, which is why they were going to capture it.
Yeah, but I mean, they should have at least referenced. See, the TOS was bad for not referencing what happened before.
Usually, yeah.
Enterprise,
a few times.
Enterprise was way better for that because every week they were talking about what happened last week or the week before or the month before because, they were the first time out in space, right?
Oh, yeah. They did. But even Next Gen, I didn't think Next Gen had many references, but
First couple seasons, no.
But, I mean, rewatching it, they do them sometimes, more than I thought they did.
Yeah, Next Gen is better at it than TOS was almost like you could just start at any episode of TOS and not have to know anything else.
Well, they didn't know such things as syndication back then, or the fact that each of these episodes are going to be analyzed by all these nerds in the future 15 times a day and talked about.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem with TOS is that nobody knew what it was going to be.
Yeah. That's true. No one knew what phenomena Star Trek was going to become.
It was essentially a failure. So
exactly,
if it wasn't for syndication, it would be a failure still. So
yeah, crazy.
Well, we did a Prime Directive series not too long ago with a bunch of episodes. And Stuart, I really wanted to ask you something. If this irked you, do you remember the Demon Planet episode in Voyager?
Yes. And
do you remember the second Demon Planet episode, which was like a season later?
Yes.
Did it piss you off? Because it makes me so angry. Because I just wanted to bring this up because maybe since Aaron's had time to think about it, he can give an answer. Because when I told him why it pissed me off, he's like, I didn't even think of that. So
To be honest, I loved the second one. I thought it was a fantastic episode.
It makes me mad because they're flying back to the Demon Planet because they're falling apart and they realize they're on the Demon Planet and they need to get back there so they don't fall apart and die.
Yeah.
And so, remember, this episode's almost exactly a season apart between season 3 and season 4, or whichever two seasons they're in. They're almost like enough episodes to make up a whole season in between. And there's usually a time gap in between seasons. So they go back, and Voyager's still hanging out around the real Voyager's still hanging around the Demon Planet. What have they been doing for over a year? And how many of the episodes have been we following the demon crew? It's just there's so many questions that episode leaves, and it just makes me angry. I'm just like, this is dumb. Why is Voyager not been getting home for a year? Why are they still near the Demon Planet?
That's interesting. Yeah, it's never really considered that. Thanks for screwing that up for me.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that was the same thing. That was my same thing. I never gave it much thought, and then you start bringing it up. I was like, I never thought about that. I haven't really, honestly, Dave. I haven't thought much more about it. It does. It just seems like a huge gap in thought process.
It's a huge gap in logic. So Voyager's like, I mean, we know Janeway's bad about getting home. Like, she drags her heels the entire time. But this is unforgivable for her to be sitting around the Demon Planet for a year when they're trying to get home. So did none of the episodes in between ever happen? It just, it hurts my head. Like, it's like how much of this isn't fact anymore? Because they couldn't have sat around the Demon Planet for a year. That makes no sense.
I don't know. Sometimes, Dave, when you start talking about this, I almost feel like you've become schizophrenic and you start focusing on something really bizarre.
No, it's just something I wanted to bring up because you didn't have an answer for me, Aaron. And I'm like, I was like, Stuart, have you thought about this? Does this irk you too? I just wanted to know.
It does now. I gotta analyze it.
Future Trek Nerds episode.
Dave, you should share our Prime Directive fact sheet with Stuart just so he can go over it at some time. We did all because we did what was that, a five parter?
Yeah.
On the Prime Directive, we broke down every instance of the Prime Directive that was mentioned or that was brought up, and how many times they broke it, or was not broken, or if it was not their fault, and stuff like that.
According to Memory Alpha, and we'll probably be adding to it as we find more instances.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Memory Alpha is not all-inclusive, I think. Because Memory Alpha didn't have Threshold on there, and they for sure as hell broke the Prime Directive and Threshold.
Yes. By leaving those salamanders on there.
Absolutely.
Salamander babies.
You know, that episode was good up until that point. That was a really good episode.
No, it wasn't.
Beginning of that was an awesome episode. I'm sorry.
Threshold is good into the last 15 minutes, and then the whole episode falls apart. Like, if they would have played that episode for the horror angle, like if there was, like, you know, the clicky creatures from Schisms, if they lived in Warp 10 space and they were, like, fucking injecting people with stuff to change them, that would be cool. That would have been interesting. But just the fact that just velocity, that's not even velocity, because warp doesn't move you, it moves stuff around you, so you're not actually attaining velocity. So they're saying velocity de-evolves you, but warp doesn't accelerate you. So I hated the science because it wasn't science. It was anti-science.
The first part was awesome.
If they would have played up the horror angle, it would have been great.
Well, Tom Paris losing his tongue was interesting.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And that's and that's horrifying. If they would have done more scary shit like that, that would have been great.
I don't know. I don't like that episode.
It's a terrible episode, but that last 15 minutes truly ruins it.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, yeah, I just had random thoughts, and I wanted Stuart to weigh in on my Demon Planet two-parter conundrum.
Yeah, I don't think I ever put that connection together, because I don't think I paid that close attention to all the Voyager episodes.
Well, it's just when we were watching it for the Prime Directive, I just looked back, and I thought they were in the same season. And it would have been bad enough if they were in the same season. It irked me more when I realized they were in two different seasons.
Yeah, right. It's a good point. It's just something I never even would have thought of. Yeah. And if you're just coming in without seeing that other episode, how would you even know what the hell was going on?
Exactly.
Yeah. Hold on. Wasn't the Voyager, when Voyager found the floating goo, they were speeding towards it, though, because they had got a distress call, and they found it, and there's no ship here.
Yes, but the thing is, Voyager should have been on the path home, like the demon planet people were. They were going home, but they were flying back to the demon planet. So they made an about face, and Voyager was still back there somewhere.
Maybe the demon planet Voyager got farther ahead. They found a wormhole, got farther ahead of the real Voyager, and on the way back, they just kind of intersected.
Maybe.
Because they didn't have the same adventures.
Yeah, but that's the problem. We don't know which adventures which ship had, or if we never saw the real Voyager for the entire time, or if we only saw the real Voyager.
The real Voyager, I think.
Well, the reading the Memory Alpha, they specifically left it ambiguous so that you'd ask that question.
So the Enterprise incident. It's a pretty good episode.
Yeah.
Wow, way to go off on a tangent there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just wanted some other input on my conundrum.
I'll gladly come back and talk about that for a full episode.
That'd be fun.
Awesome.
All right. Well, Enterprise incident was a great episode. It was a lot of fun. Thank you, Stuart, for joining us again. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks. It was awesome. It's always fun talking to you guys. It's like just hanging out. I love it.
Hanging out, having a brew, talking with your buddies about Star Trek. It's awesome. I love it. I love it too.
Absolutely.
Much. All right. Where can we find you on the internets?
Ooh, you can go to YouTube, type in Trek Yards, all one word, and please subscribe. We got a lot of, as you said, we have a lot of videos.
A lot of content.
A lot of backlog to check out. So, and if you have a particular ship you like or an incident in Star Trek history or some piece of tech that you want to learn about, just type in Trek Yards and that keyword, and you should find a video on it. If not, we'll get on it eventually.
Trek Yards Demon Planet. No, it's not there yet.
There won't be one. There won't be one yet, no. And you can find us on Facebook as well. There's the main Trek Yards page where there's a lot of great discussions about tech and ships and just really cool stuff, and it's a great community. And we also have a few other Trek Yards pages on Facebook as well. There's a Trek Yards model page where you can share your models of Star Trek ships and your build progress and things like that. Or check out Fleet Yards, which is our spin-off series as well, where we talk about just ships from other sci-fi franchises.
Nice.
And of course, Twitter and Instagram and all that. Look us up.
Awesome. All right. Well, the show, Synthaholics, you can find us online at Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. You can join our Facebook group at Facebook.com/group/Synthaholics. And check out our YouTube channel, YouTube.com/Synthaholics. I haven't been posting a lot of stuff there lately because things have been busy with my life. But one day I'll get back on that train and we'll start putting out more drink videos and speculation videos and other things as well. Not just the podcast. So there'll be more stuff to come. Just give me a little bit more time, guys. And as far as the Twitters go, you can find me personally at David_J_Duncan, and Aaron is at Blackbird2004, and the show's at Set the Hulk Duo.
Absolutely. And if you can, please go on Apple iTunes, rate and view us. 5 stars are much appreciated, and leave a nice little comment in the comment section. Helps us get seen by the algorithms of iTunes and the podcast world. Also, if you have some money that you'd like to throw our way, we greatly appreciate any contribution you give us. Go to Patreon.com/Synthaholics to help grease the wheels of the ever-moving podcast empire of Synthaholics. Synthaholics should have its own empire, shouldn't it?
Maybe it's small like the Romulan Empire.
Yes. Well, we just left Vulcan. But then, also...
they don't drink enough Synthale.
Another great way to support the podcast is to tell a friend. Tell your family members, your spouse, your boyfriend, girlfriend, about Synthaholics, about if they like sci-fi, if they like Star Trek. And you want to hear the ramblings of TV shows that they enjoy. I mean, we get into all sorts of details. Like you said, we've attacked this Enterprise incident. We did a huge thing on the Prime Directive, 5-part series on that. So we definitely try to have some fun and tease out all these things. So let them know. Let your boss know.
Yeah, and if you have a non-binary significant other, you can let them know as well. It doesn't have to be a boyfriend or girlfriend.
No, you could do whatever they might be. They could be. They could be Andorian. They have like lots of different sex, I think.
I think they have 4. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah. So, yeah, word of mouth is a great way to support the group.
Very much so. Well, thank you, Stuart, again for joining us. It was always great to have you with us.
Absolutely. It was fun, guys.
Yes. Thanks for joining us.
And thanks, Aaron. And it was a lot of fun. Thank you all for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all.
And we'll blow shit up, pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Yay! And we got our outtake at the end already, so woohoo!
Speak to me.
Hey, Dave. How you doing, Dave?
I'm just trying to get the levels even. Can you say something, Stuart?
I'm sorry, I can't do that, Dave.
That's the best.
You know, you're the first one that's ever done that joke.
No way.
Yeah.
It's true. I don't believe that for 5 seconds.
It's true.
Well, there you go. I feel honored.
Better save that audio.
Oh, yeah, I'm recording, so it'll be in the outtake.
I'm sorry.